Reading from Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 37, Chapters The Lord in the Heart. Pibantiye Bhagavata Atmanasatam Katam Ritam Shravana Puteshu Samritam Punanti Te Vishaya Vidushita Sayam Pradanti Tach Charana Saroruhantikam. This is one of the most significant verses in the Bhagavatam. According to Jiva Goswami, this verse ends the Bhagavatam. This finishes Sukadeva Goswami's answer to Maharaj Parikshit as to what a person should hear about and do at the time of death. Then after this, Maharaj Parikshit asks more questions, and therefore the Bhagavatam continues. But when Jiva Goswami identifies the six most important verses in the Bhagavatam, the one that he identifies as the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, the ending verse of the Bhagavatam, is this one. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those who drink through oral reception, which word here means drink? Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees. Where do we have beloved of the devotees in the Sanskrit? Atmana satam. What does sat mean? Truth. So how do we know this? What does it mean? Satam means devotees. What can you understand about devotees? They must be what? Truthful. Must be absorbed in truth. The beloved of the devotees purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the personality of Godhead. Purport. The sufferings of human society are due to a polluted aim of life, namely lording it over material resources. So why do we suffer? We have the wrong aim. We have the wrong aim. If I'm aiming for the wall instead of the door, I will suffer. Okay? Eh? Pretty simple. The wrong aim, you'll suffer. Just like Prabhupada told my father, if you want nice eyesight, you put good food in your mouth, but if you put the food in your eyes, you become blind. So if you have the wrong goal, you have the carrot, but you put the eye as your goal instead of the mouth, then you suffer. The more human society engages in the exploitation of undeveloped material resources for sense gratification, the more it will be entrapped by the illusory material energy of the Lord, and thus the distresses of the world will be intensified instead of diminished. So everybody can see that the more that we exploit the material resources for sense gratification, the more our sufferings increase. This is not, as they say, rocket science. We were just at an eco conference in Hungary, and one of the leading scientists in Hungary was speaking. He's not at all a devotee, but he was making the point that as long as we try to exploit material resources for sense gratification, we will suffer. Of course, part of his solution is, let's just have fewer people on the planet, and then we can each have more. So that was his, you know, birth control, abortion, ki jai, and then each of us will be able to exploit more resources. That was a lot of his solution. It was quite interesting. But he did make the point that as long as we're exploiting the resources of the planet, as long as some of us are taking and other people are, you know, some people have so much food they're throwing it out and other people are starving, then we're going to increase our miseries instead of alleviating them. As Prahlad Maharaj said, that the cure is worse than the disease. And we find this just like, you know, everybody's so happy with antibiotics, but they cause as many problems as they solve. So this is, you can look at this with all material solutions that are exploiting material resources for sense gratification. The human necessities of life are fully supplied by the Lord in the shape of food grains, milk, fruit, wood, stone, sugar, silk, jewels, cotton, salt, water, vegetables, etc. in sufficient quantity to feed and care for the human race of the world, as well as the living beings on each and every planet within the universe. The supply source is complete, and only a little energy by the human being is required to get his necessities into the proper channel. So Prabhupada's saying here that if we have the proper aim of life, even materially, we'll be satisfied, we'll be taken care of. In fact, we'll have better opulences and a better life, even materially speaking. Some of the research they did on the devotees' eco-village in Hungary was very astonishing. It was all in Hungarian. It was being translated to me over earphones. So I wasn't able to get the papers because I wouldn't understand what I was looking at. But they were showing through statistical analysis that the standard of living of the devotees on the farm was 50% higher than the standard of living of the average person in a Western city. It was pretty incredible. The statistics showed that the devotees were giving back to the earth, that most people were taking more resources than the earth could provide. Something like, if people take caffeine, it pushes the liver to give you more energy than you're normally able to have, and then you feel exhausted. So people are pulling more resources out of the earth than the earth is normally providing. They're exhausting it, but they were showing the devotees on this eco-village where there was a negative. They were giving back to the earth. And even though they were giving back to the earth, their standard of living, their comforts of life, were 50% higher than that in the modern Western city. So I was speaking with the devotees there and saying, we've got to get this published in English. And Shivaram Maharaj was saying that this is the sort of scientific research we need to show that these statements Prabhupada's making in the Bhagavatam are true, even from a scientific perspective. That if you have the right goal in life, even from a material point of view, that your life will be full of natural opulences. That doesn't mean that if you're a devotee of Krishna, he goes before you with a steamroller and makes everything in your life perfect. That's not what we're saying. But that if you have a natural life, that even materially, society will be happier and more peaceful. There is no need of machines and tools or huge steel plants for artificially creating comforts of life. Life is never made comfortable by artificial needs, but by plain living and high thinking. So the things that we think of as comforts actually bring us, in most cases, discomforts. There was also some research that nowadays it takes the same time to get across London by car as it used to take in a horse and buggy. From the traffic, yeah. Oh, now they put in congestion things, so they reduced it a little bit, right? So now maybe it's the same as a fast horse. Do you know when they got rid of the horses and buggies, you know what their complaints were about the horses? They were polluting the environment with their manure, and they were causing so much noise, clattering down the street, and so much congestion. Yes, okay. The highest perfectional thinking, now you may say, okay, Prabhupada's talking about the negative. Punantite vishaya vidushita swayam. It gets rid of the negative, but what is the positive? What is the positive alternative? Many times in Back to Godhead, we get articles submitted that have 90%, this is wrong with the material world, this is wrong with the material world, this is wrong with the material world, and 10%, this is what's right about Krishna consciousness. So we're not just criticizing, we're providing a positive alternative. Prabhupada says, the highest perfectional thinking for human society is suggested here by Sukadeva Goswami, namely sufficiently hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Huh? That's the cure? Sit around and hear a book? I imagine all the conferences in the world, poverty, disease, abuse, war, crime. What should we do? Read this book. For men in this age of Kali, when they have lost the perfect vision of life, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the torchlight by which to see the real path. So sometimes I ask people, if you're going to start a project, an endeavor, what's the first thing you need? A plan! Yeah, we have people trained here in leadership. Jai. Usually, people's answer is money. So if you want to do a project, what's the first thing you need? They'll say money. I say money is useless if you don't have a vision. You have to have a vision. Why are we suffering again? Because we have the wrong aim. Can you see why having the right vision would cure all the problems? If you have the right aim in life? Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has commented on the Kathamritam mentioned in this verse and has indicated Srimad Bhagavatam to be the nectarian message of the personality of Godhead. By sufficient hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, the polluted aim of life, namely lording it over matter, will subside. So as I hear Bhagavatam, my desire for the wrong goal will subside. And the people in general in all parts of the world will be able to live a peaceful life of knowledge and bliss. So we really do want people to be happy. Sometimes devotees think, if I'm surrendered, that means I have to become very unhappy. But we really want a life of happiness, spiritual happiness, and even material, a peaceful, healthy life. For a pure devotee of the Lord, any topics in relation with his name, fame, quality, entourage, etc., are all pleasing. And because such topics have been approved, now this is a very interesting sentence. Because such topics have been approved by great devotees like, now who do you think Prabhupada's going to list here is the great devotees that have approved these topics? Sukadeva Goswami, who else would you think? What authorities does Prabhupada usually quote? Okay, Lord Chaitanya. What other authorities might he quote? The Mahajans. Okay, the heads of the different sampradayas. He's going to say something very interesting. He gives three names. One of them is pretty common. He gives Narada. And the other two he gives are Hanuman and Nanda Maharaj. So, I don't know of any other places. And maybe there's some where Prabhupada gives this list of the authorities who've approved the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he says, because such topics have been approved by great devotees like Narada, Hanuman, Nandamaj, and other inhabitants of Vrindavana. Yeah, Prabhupada says these purports are his ecstasies. He must have been in a very sweet ecstasy when he's writing this purport. Hanuman has approved these messages of the Bhagavatam. You've got to listen to them. And Nandamaj also, he's approving. And all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, they're also approving, so you must listen. How nice. Don't think Prabhupada's gone. Not like that. Especially the Gopis. He doesn't mention the Gopis by name, he just says the other inhabitants of Vrindavan. Yeah. Certainly such messages are transcendental and pleasing to the heart and soul. And by constant hearing of the messages of the Bhagavad Gita and later of the Srimad Bhagavatam, one is assured herein by Srila Sukadeva Goswami that he will reach the personality of Godhead and render him transcendental loving service in the spiritual planet of the name Goloka Vrindavana, which resembles a huge lotus flower. So that's from Sarorohantikam, near the lotus. Thus, by the process of bhakti yoga, directly accepted as suggested in this verse, by sufficient hearing of the transcendental message of the Lord, the material contamination is directly eliminated without one's attempting to contemplate the impersonal virat conception of the Lord. And by practicing bhakti yoga, if the performer is... Now this is one of those sentences you read and you go, oh. And by practicing bhakti yoga, if the performer is not purified from the material contamination, he must be a pseudo-devotee. For such an imposter, there's no remedy for being freed from material entanglement. That's the kind of statement you wish wasn't in Prabhupada's books. You know, it's just like, why does Prabhupada have to say that? You read it and you think, that's me, I'm an imposter, a pseudo devotee, and there's no remedy for me. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Lord in the Heart. Pibantiye bhagavata atmana satam katamrita shravana puteshu samritam punanti te vishaya vidushita swayam rajanti tacharna sarorukam tikam. Those who drink through oral reception, drinking through the ears, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees. Beloved of the devotees are called here again? Satam and atmana satam. What do you mean atmana satam? Atmana means? Self, right? The very soul of the devotees. Purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the personality of Godhead. You ever been really thirsty? Have you ever been like really, 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 really thirsty? We were talking yesterday how nowadays with the restriction on the airplanes that you can't bring in any water, if you don't want to spend the 4 or 5 euros for a water bottle on the other side of security, you know, by the time you wait for your flight at the gate and then you board your flight and you say, excuse me, can I have some water? Yes, we're getting everybody seated. You know, by the time you get your water, you may have gone hours and hours in the airplane. I remember once being in India before the days of bottled water, and our rickshaw wala in Puri had asked us, please give me something from America. And so we gave him one of our canteens. Remember the days of canteens before water bottles? So we only had one canteen, and when we were in Vrindavan, it was like April, it was getting really hot. And we were out at Radhakund, and it was in the area around Radhakund. We were so thirsty. You ever been really that thirsty where you're just consumed with thirst? So really, all of us in this world, we're very, very thirsty, as Thomas Merton, the famous Christian theologian who wrote an appreciation of Prabhupada's Gita, as he said, we all have a God-shaped vacuum in our heart. We're actually very, very intensely thirsty. We're looking for eternity. We want to live forever in a healthy, youthful, energetic life. We're looking for beauty and harmony. We're looking for relationships where there's no pain, where there's nice communication and understanding, where nobody hurts anybody else's feelings. We're looking for fun and play and excitement. We're looking for something that's really truthful. Here the devotees are called, they're full of truth. We're looking for truth. We're looking for something that's really authentic. We want the real thing. We want to be authentic. We're looking to express our own individuality. We're looking for knowledge. We want to understand things. And we're thirsting for these things, and we're trying to find them in this world. But just like someone who walks into the wall instead of the door, we don't find them. In fact, what we find is simply an increases our thirst. It just increases our frustration and our hankering. And you can get everything in this world and you say, it doesn't make it. You know, go out and get your career and your money and your house and your family and your degrees and your car and your fame and you look at it all one day and say, is that it? The thirst is still there. In fact, the thirst just increases and increases and increases. And then we blame the other people in our life, typically. Most people blame the other people in their life. If only you had done this or didn't do this, then I would be satisfied. You know, it's your responsibility to satisfy all of my desires, and you're not doing it. Therefore, I hate you. You know, that's generally, we usually put it on other people. But we also sometimes put it on nature, or we hate our own body, or we express this frustration. But really, one cannot satisfy one's thirst through material sense gratification. It's just not possible. It's like trying to satisfy your hunger by putting petrol in your car. It just doesn't work. You know, or as Prabhupada said, trying to put food in your eyes. You'll never satisfy your hunger. And therefore, instead of just looking at all of the problems piecemeal, which we can also sometimes do, if you cut your finger, you put on a Band-Aid. It's not that I've cut my finger, oh, this is due to my polluted aim of life, let me sit down and just hear the Bhagavatam. Obviously, one takes ordinary remedial measures when they are available. But we don't think that we're going to solve all of our problems of life through these remedial measures. What we want to do is satisfy our real thirst. And as Krishna says in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that when you achieve this, you think, I have nothing more to achieve. You feel fully satisfied. He said, this is the actual solution to all miseries caused by material contact. Just to change one's aim of life. To aim instead that, first it's going to be, okay, I want to satisfy all of my desires by serving Krishna. And then serving Krishna becomes so wonderful, one forgets about satisfying one's own desires. Not because one's repressed one's own desires, but because all of one's desires are satisfied. Serving Krishna is so satisfying that one simply focuses on serving Krishna. And how does one achieve that state? How does one make the switch? Because we can know intellectually and experientially that trying to satisfy my thirst materially isn't working. I think all of us in this room are convinced of that. It just doesn't work. But how do we switch? It seems like it's very difficult to make the switch. We're habituated, like a path. You have a path, Jai Shishi Radha Gopinath. You have a path that you've walked on over and over and over again. We have a habit. And then when we'll tend to go on that path, it's the easy, automatic thing. Like one time our family moved to a new house that was just a 10-minute drive away from the old house. And one time when I went out shopping, I was just driving on the, what do you call it here, motorway, highway? So I'm just driving along, and all of a sudden, there I am at my old house. I said, how did I get here? I must have just, you know, automatic. So we have this tendency, just automatic. I want to try to be happy by sense gratification, by exploiting the resources of material nature, by trying to pretend to be Krishna, by trying to make everybody else into Krishna. You know, that's my tendency. So how to correct this? And here the cure is given by hearing the Bhagavatam. By hearing the Shastra, Prabhupada also mentions Bhagavad Gita. But specifically by hearing the Bhagavatam. So if we just think a minute about what's in the Bhagavatam, you know, there's stories of the... Of course, Prabhupada says here, you don't need to contemplate the impersonal Virat conception. But there's stories about how Krishna is manifest in the world. Someone may say, I can't yet meditate on Krishna's divine lila. You know, I don't spontaneously think about Krishna carrying Nandamarja's slippers or dancing on Kaliya. Okay, meditate how Krishna is the light of the sun. How Balaram is gravity. You know that? Balaram is gravity. Krishna means all attractive, so we're all being attracted right now by Balaram. That one can easily meditate on that. Krishna says he's earth, water, fire, air, ether. The light in this room, the air that we're breathing, Krishna says he's the five kinds of life air. So these descriptions are all given in the Bhagavatam. How even in what we can perceive with our senses are all different forms of the Lord, different manifestations of the Lord. We read in the Bhagavatam about the activities of creation, how wonderful the Lord is, how clever he is, how extraordinary he is. When we notice the things in the world, just like one appreciates this painting or the carving work in the temple, so one also appreciates the qualities of the Lord as creator. And then so many descriptions of the devotees. We have Gajendra, who in his great pain and distress still made an offering to the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj, who was so forgiving. Now, how many of us would forgive somebody, our own relative, who tries to kill us? You know, if our own relative even slightly insults us, then we become so angry. And Prahlad Maharaj is full of forgiveness. Ambarish Maharaj, who was so also humble and tolerant and willing to serve. Prithu Maharaj, who was the perfect leader. So many stories that tell us how to become a satam, how to become actually filled with truth. How do you live in truth? Because the wrong aim of life means something false. Not false absolutely. Your eyes are not false, but as a vehicle for food, your eyes are false. The world is not false, but as a means of entering outside, it's false. So, you know, we want to know how to live in truth. If I want to be happy, I have to do something that's truthful. My suffering comes from doing something that's false, from seeing something for what it's not. I think a wall is a door. I think an eye is a mouth. I'm in falsity. Therefore, I have to come to truth. Well, what does it mean to live in truth? How do people who live in truth live? What do they do? This was Arjuna's question. What do they do? We were talking about this on Sunday. You can see what they do. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives a description. They're equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress. They don't care for any residence. They're unattached to family. They have pure, unalloyed devotion to me. Gives this list. Okay. Just like in my statistics class. Oh, we called it sadistics. They were writing all the formulas on the board And at one point I said to the professor, would you please give me a practical example? He said, yeah, sure, z to the second power equals. I said, no, and everybody started laughing. I said, no, a real life example. So Bhagavatam is giving a real life example. What does it mean? What does it mean to live in truth? What does it mean to be filled with truth? And what are the experiences? How do those people experience life? And we can have some idea, you know, God is great, He's the Creator, He's wonderful, but the details about God are given in the Bhagavatam. In what other scripture of the world are there details like this? Or if there are, they're misunderstood, like Song of Solomon says, yes, my beloved has eyes like a dove. Right? And there's, no, it's not real eyes. God doesn't have real eyes. It's just some poetry. The description, actually, in Song of Solomon is very like the description that Maharaj is given when Maharaj Chitraketu sees Sankarshan. But what descriptions we're getting. The Lord becomes a golden fish with a golden horn that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and He's swimming in the ocean and looking on His devotees with love and pulling a ship full of seeds. Or He becomes this huge turtle, right, who feels an itching on His back. And He lies in an ocean of milk, and there's a golden mountain that's polishing all the ornaments on His back. That's why whenever you see Lord Vishnu, His ornaments are very shiny because they were polished by the turning of the golden mountain. And how the breathing of korma, this breathing of korma we still see now in the tides. Actually, this one yoga pranayam that is said to put your breathing in the same rhythm as that of korma. And then we have, of course, Nrsingadev, ferocious, scary, awesome power. You know, when we get angry, our face turns a little red, maybe, you know. When Krishna gets angry, he looks like a lion. Just imagine. And his hands are so soft, but his nails are like lightning. And even Hiranyakashipu's chest is like steel. You know, what superhero can compare to Nrsingadev rescuing Prahlad Maharaj? And Vamandev, who just comes as this little boy, just give me 3 steps of land. Don't be greedy. Be satisfied. And then his eyes are the sun and the moon, and he opens his eyes and closes them, and it's day and night, and he steps through the covering of the universe. Hey, what, in what scripture does one find descriptions like this? So by hearing these descriptions, we start to say, oh, that's where the water is. That's where I can relieve my thirst. It's like Jesus met this one woman at a well. You know that story? Jesus meeting the woman at the well. And he says to her, please give me some water. I've heard this story analyzed as to how to be an expert teacher. Someday I want to go through the Shastra. How does Krishna teach? How do all of the sages teach? Develop a whole theory of education. Anyway. So Jesus is talking to this woman at the well, and he says, please give me some water. And she was a low-class lady, and she was surprised because Jesus was from a high class. And she said, you know, how is it you're asking me for water? And Jesus told her some things about her life which no one knew. He said, you have had 5 husbands, and the man you're living with now is not your husband. So she was very surprised. And she went to get Jesus water, and he said, actually, if you like, I can give you living water, having drunk which you will never be thirsty again. And Prabhupada also talked about, right, how in the spiritual world the water is alive. Toyam amritam. So we want this living water. And as we hear the Bhagavatam, it acts like this living water going through our ears and filling us. Right? Completely filled, sambritam, fully filled. We have this God-shaped vacuum in our heart, and we're trying to fill it with all these things. But because Krishna is unlimited, Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam, Anantarupam, he has an unlimited form. This hole in our heart is unlimited. You know, the pot of milk was thinking like that when Mother Yasoda was breastfeeding Krishna. It thought Krishna's belly is unlimited and Mother Yasoda's milk is unlimited. They'll never be finished. So Krishna is unlimited. And this ache in our heart is for the unlimited. And as we drink these messages of the Bhagavatam, how Krishna's manifest in the material world, how he's the creator, what are the devotees like, what are their qualities, what are their activities, what is Krishna like? What is he like in all his different forms and manifestations? What as we hear these things, our thirst becomes satiated. But of course, spiritual satiation, anandam buddhivardhanam, it's expensive. It was just hearing Bhaktisiddhanta's purport to the first verse of the Shikshastaka, and he says, although the jiva is limited, the jiva's capacity for ananda is unlimited. Just imagine. Unlimited. So not satiated like material satiation, where your desires are fulfilled and then it goes down again. Satiated so that you're overflowing. It's unlimited. Even though we're very, very tiny, very infinitesimal, still it's unlimited. Therefore, hearing this Bhagavatam is so wonderful. And we should therefore hear it with attention, with care, with thought, with reverence, with meditation. Baladeva Vidyabhushan, in commenting on Ishopanishad Mantra 15, says that one should hear, one should reflect, one should meditate on and apply, and one should pray. He's quoting the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad for the first three, and the fourth he adds, from Mantra 15. This is the process of learning. So we hear with deep reflection and deep meditation, not just officially, not as a ritual. Now I've heard the Bhagavatam, okay, great. What did it say? I don't know. How to do, but meditating on it throughout the day. What have I heard from the Bhagavatam? And somehow or other to make an effort, say, all right, how can I improve my hearing of Bhagavatam? What could I do to improve? Maybe I could hear more. Maybe I could hear better. Make some plan as to how I could improve. And there's no end to that improvement and no end to that meditation. And just by doing that alone, just by doing that, we will be able to shift our goal. And as soon as we shift our goal, all of our problems are solved. That doesn't mean that if you broke your leg, it suddenly heals. I don't mean like that. But one no longer will experience the miseries of the material life, and one will get all of one's ultimate desires fulfilled. All of the hankerings that we're trying to fulfill with things in this world will be factually fulfilled. So I have to end now, including questions, I was told. So I guess that's it. No questions. Yes. I'm going to be very obedient for once, a rarity. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.